There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Dubai Eye 103.8 special.
Broadcasting live from the 2018 Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. For the love of words.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With us now we have Tom Fletcher, Visiting Professor of International Relations at New York University. He was the Downing Street Foreign Policy Advisor to three Prime Ministers and UK's Ambassador to Lebanon for a time, and has written a book called The Naked Diplomat, Understanding Power and Politics in the Digital Age. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you physically with us today, because I've spoken to you a couple of times over the phone, so it's really nice to have you actually in the studio.
It's great fun to be here, and it's lovely to be coming out to all these other events as well at the festival. It's the best thing about being an author.
What have you seen that you've really enjoyed so far?
So we've had a fantastic session at Anthony Horowitz with my 11-year-old son, and you can see the queue and the excitement around there is extraordinary for meeting him. We snuck in and met him last night, so we got a head start, and I'm looking forward to going to Cities in a minute.
One thing that I want to ask you, so we're looking forward to your session this afternoon. It's at 2 o'clock. You're going to be speaking alongside His Excellency Omar Saif Babash about how technology can be used responsibly by those with power. What are you most looking forward to about that discussion?
Well, Omar is a bit of a rock star, you know, around here, and in fact internationally. And he's written this extraordinary book, Letters to a Young Muslim. But it's really about letters to a young global citizen. It's a great set of examples of how we should actually try to live together in the digital age. So I'm looking forward to listening to him, but also to having a bit of banter and a bit of debate with him as well. We tend, when we get together, to tease each other, and so probably there'll be a bit of teasing as well.
Rachel, you had a couple of questions that you wanted to ask Tom, didn't you?
Yes, well, basically, along with Omar Saif Gabash, you've turned into a bit of a rock star. I met a couple of young people, 14 I would guess, yesterday, who'd been to your session. And they had the book and they were going to read it. And I thought, there's something very special about a book about diplomacy that can actually capture the attention of teenagers. And so I just wanted to ask you, having children of your own, did you deliberately write with a younger audience in mind, as well as somebody who would typically want to read about ambassadorships and diplomacy?
That's a good question, actually. I think I probably did without realizing that. Certainly what I wanted to do was to open up this profession, which, as you say, is quite a closed profession. People think of Ferrero Rocher or James Bond or this whole life behind the curtain.
Yes.
And I wanted to show people that actually this has an impact on their daily lives. So that's what motivated me to write. And I guess a large part of that must be younger folk who I desperately hope will go into diplomacy in the future.
I was also thinking, as I read your suggestions of what ambassadors and diplomats need to be in the future, which was all about something that machines are not, it's also almost like a kind of manifesto for education and about what children need to be in the future as they're entering a world where robots might be working alongside them. And so I just thought it's more than just a description and like a history of diplomacy. It is a manifesto for the future almost. And I do think it's a fantastic book. Really enjoyed reading
it. Thank you so much. It's funny you should say that, because what I'm doing now is trying to write a curriculum for the next generation. So the logical next step for me after the book was to try and think about what is it that the next generation need in order to ensure the robots work for them and not the other way around.
Rather than the other way around,
and
yeah.
Ultimately, it comes back to some of these diplomatic skills. It's all about being kind, being curious, being courageous. And the more that we can build the emphasis on those sorts of skills and those sorts of character attributes, the more diplomatic the world will be. And that can only be a good thing.
Absolutely.
I read an article recently where you were talking about the things that we've learned from 2017. And one of the things that you said was that we need to be paying more attention to things like artificial intelligence and the fact that students studying technology-based curriculum, by the time they've finished university or finished their education, is already out of date. So that's something that's quite important to you.
Very, very important to me. It's striking that really no government in the world is yet ready for the implications of artificial intelligence, and the leaders of the tech industry are saying to us, we are creating risks that we don't understand. And it's very difficult for governments to react to that, because we're used to reacting to things that are very practical and straightforward in front of us. And so we need a whole new discussion, and I've written a report for the UN Secretary General arguing that we need a new debate between tech leaders, scientists and government about how we maximize the opportunities of technology, but also recognize and minimize the challenges.
I read it's often when you do your talks, you ask people who they think is going to be more important in these arenas, Google or Britain. And I thought that was such a fantastic question. And that's sort of kind of connected with what, and as I understand it, you say the majority would choose Google.
It depends on the audience. I still think Britain's got a lot going for it.
Yes, I like to think so.
And, you know, if you look at the soft power of Britain, everything from Adele to Ed Sheeran to the Premiership, Dickens, Shakespeare, I think that's an extraordinary part of what we offer the world. It's why, if you look around a literature festival like this, you'll see so many British voices, so much of the UK here. And I think, regardless of Brexit and what we're going through at the moment, the national discussion we're having at the moment, that will remain a huge part of our offer to the world.
And it's interesting that you bring in all these people who aren't traditional kind of monarchic or political figures. And I love the way that the book kind of moves towards the end toward this idea of the citizen diplomat and saying that actually it's now open for everybody to have a part in shaping the future.
Completely. This isn't some craft that we do behind the curtain. It's not some kind of creed that needs its own codes and its own training and so on. You know, there are citizen diplomats here all over the place. Anyone who's working on coexistence, on breaking down these sorts of barriers that are put up often by politicians between us, is basically doing diplomacy. You don't need to be in an embassy or calling yourself Your Excellency to do that. And if there's one thing I really hope comes out of the book, it's that emphasis on the diplomatic skills that you mentioned around curiosity and creativity and just being adaptable and excited about the world.
Yes, yeah, that's something that really comes through from the book, this idea of hope and the kind of upbeat nature of it, because you hear so much negativity about how there's more dishonesty, whereas you're focusing on the other way, which is that actually technology leads to more honesty because it's so easy to be caught out nowadays.
Completely. And for me, every time there's been an extra wave of transparency on what we do in government, when it's easier for people to really see and understand what we're doing, I actually think we get better at our jobs. So I am all for having more of that. It makes our lives harder because you're having to justify what you're doing to several audiences all the time, explain what you're doing. 100 years ago, we didn't have to do any of that. We might have occasionally gone, maybe done a radio interview where we'd have just given you the three things.
Whatever
the question, we'd have just said what we were going to say anyway. Now we have to get out there and make our case because otherwise, like any other industry, we'll be disrupted. Someone else will come along and do it better than us.
I remember reading about this didn't start with a book necessarily, because you had a big blog that you used to run. I can't remember the name of it. Was it The Naked Diplomat? Yeah. What was the initial response to that? Because it was quite new what you were doing at the time.
It was high risk.
Right.
And I suspect that not all my colleagues were as enthusiastic as I was about it. Many of them would point out the risks. And I was always conscious that I was only one mistake away from really messing it up. And so I'd have very strict rules with myself about which time of day I would produce the content, when I was allowed to tweet, when I was not allowed to tweet, and so on, to try and ensure that I was tweeting responsibly.
Rules that some leaders don't have.
Some leaders, particularly in the White House, don't seem to operate on the same code. But I think it's important. If you're using social media, you don't have to be narcissistic. You don't have to be bullying and hectoring. You don't have to be justifying yourself the whole time like a three-year-old or like the US president. You can do it in a different way. You can create content that engages people, that excites people, that explains what you're doing. And I was really lucky in those days because only four ambassadors were actually on Twitter. And so people were still quite curious. Now everyone's on it. You know, it's no longer as exciting as it was.
Does everyone have a blog, though?
No. So probably the blogging has actually receded a bit because people's attention spans are towards tweeting much more, Instagram and so on. But the blogging at the time for me was quite important because it was often the blogs that people would share through.
Did you have to kind of usher the people that you were advising in politics onto social networks? Because I can remember when David Cameron, for example, first joined Twitter, there was absolute glee amongst people that they could comment and hilariously in their eyes. And so how did that work? And how did you have to kind of coax people along?
It's quite difficult because there are risks. So I worked for the last paper and pen Prime Minister. Tony Blair would write everything down in a beautiful fountain pen. Gordon Brown was the first email Prime Minister. And he would send us emails at 3:45 in the morning, giving us instructions. David Cameron was the first text message Prime Minister. And a lot of the work I do with him, and he's here in the UAE at the moment, was by text message. in the meeting itself, saying, what do you think of this, and don't say that, and so on. It's another jump, though, to go to social media.
Yeah.
And I think particularly in the West, and it's a challenge here, I have this one theory that it's easier to be to imagine a more responsive government somewhere like this in the UAE, with a smaller population, with a more respectful population.
And a more respectful media.
And a more respectful media than it is going on as a UK politician. Imagine if I was a UK politician saying, right, tell me your views today and I'll try and respond. The first 100 things I'd get would be telling me that people's views of my haircut, my various failures.
General abuse.
It would be abuse, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would be a kind of deluge of abuse. And it would be that much harder to kind of wade through that and respond. So I think we'll find our way to a more respectful use of social media than we have at the moment. But it's a jungle out there as it stands. And that's, in a way, that's part of the fun.
Also, I liked your kind of focus on the open platform that comes nowadays. So in terms of what we can learn from somebody like Google, and I was interested, you made comments about how the UK was one of the most open in terms of sharing information and how that can help in terms of creating trust and creating relationships.
Yeah, and it's a definite decision to go that way.
Yes.
So for example, last year I did a review of the Foreign Office, and initially we thought this should be a private review just for ministers because I was going to be quite constructive, but quite critical.
Yeah.
And the leadership, actually, to their credit, said, put it out. Put it all out in public. It's only going to leak anyway. let's have a public debate about what we do, including our strengths and our weaknesses. And I think that was a really courageous way of approaching it. Courageous in a positive sense.
In a positive way,
normally,
yeah.
When civil servants say courageous,
yeah,
they mean it's a terrible,
yeah.
Terrible idea. But they were also very good at freeing us up to use social media. And I think you have to trust people's judgment. If you're going out there as an ambassador doing a radio interview or a TV interview or tweeting, you have to exercise a certain level of judgment and responsibility. And we have to trust our people to do that. Of course, they'll make mistakes now and again. But the biggest mistake is not to be out there in the conversations that everyone else is having.
Not engaging.
Leaving that space. If we don't engage, we leave the space to the trolls, to Justin Bieber's hair, to cute cats falling off a sofa.
Although I do love those.
They're all good. I have nothing against any of those. Or to the extremists, the radicalizers and the Donald Trumps.
It was interesting that you link extremists in different areas and consider a Donald Trump an extremist in the same way that you would have in...
So, I mean, obviously, I'm not equating Donald Trump to Islamic State. but there's a use of language there, which is about weaponizing intolerance and about the other.
Yes. Yeah,
everything that's wrong in our society is the fault of those people over there.
And if we should build a wall.
If we build a big wall, yeah. We can keep out all of those problems. I'm in diplomacy. There is no 21st century problem to which the answer is a bigger wall. We all know that. I think even he knows that. But that kind of language then gets weaponized. The intolerance gets weaponized. And that's what's so dangerous. That's what leads to extremism, radicalization, and people picking up guns and shooting their opponents.
That's something that your panelist today speaks very well on in his book, Letters to a Young Muslim. You're a big fan of that book as well, aren't you,
Rachel? A huge fan. And as I said, it's not just letters to a young Muslim. It's letters to young people everywhere, and actually old people everywhere. It's brilliant for everyone. And actually, I wondered if you'd considered, with sons of your own, following and doing something similar.
So I can never keep up with Omar. He's always one book ahead of me.
Yeah.
I'm actually, here's a scoop for you, trying to write a crime novel at the moment, which is nearly finished. But I did collect a book of advice for my son, Charlie, who's with me here at the festival somewhere, buzzing around, enjoying it.
He does. I've seen him a few times, and he does look like he's having a good
time. He's having a great time. I collected a book of advice from world leaders, Barack Obama, Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela, Bill Clinton. They all wrote one page of advice for Charlie. And he has this book. Barack Obama read it, and he said, Charlie will either be very rich or very clever, depending on whether he sells it or reads it. And it's an amazing book of their collected wisdom about the world.
Wow.
So that's as close as I've got. I think beyond that, probably my kids are beyond listening to their dad's advice.
That's a pretty special book to have, though.
It's a very cool book. Frustratingly, we can't find it in the house at the moment. So my job when I go home this evening is to dig it out. But it must be there somewhere.
I hope you find it.
I'm terrified.
So your session today with Omar is at 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
It's called Digital Diplomacy. I think I've got that right because I'm going off of my memory, which is rapidly failing today.
I hope it's that one. Otherwise, I'm in big trouble if it's something else.
Otherwise, you'll turn up to the wrong session. But thank you so much for coming on the show today, Tom. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on. Have a great session.
You're listening to Talking of Books.
Broadcasting live from the 2018 Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. For the love of words.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.